What's good, y'all? Your boy Brandon back again, another episode of the Honor Up Podcast. Man, this week we got a very special guest. I'm here with Benji and Alfredo in the studio, and we got none other than Jesse Magdaleno in the house, baby.
Hey, what up? Let's get it. What up, guys?
What's good?
What up?
We appreciate you sharing your time with us, man.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Shout out to our boy, man. Our boy for putting this together, man. Luis, man. Holland.
Yep.
Good looking out,
Holland,
man.
Thank you.
Yeah. But let's just right off the bat, man. How has life been for you? It's been a little while since we've seen you in the ring, and like we were talking about before the cameras turned on, you're someone that's a little bit more low key, right? You post on social media, but not too much. So how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, life's good. Life's always been good. It's been great for me. You know, even through the hard times, through the good times, you know, I take it with the punches and I just roll with it. But yeah, I'm very low key. I like you know, my life to be private. I've always been that way since a kid, and not much has, you know, really changed into my adult life.
Yeah. Did you ever get in any fights as a kid? Obviously, we know you're a professional fighter now, but that's something we were wondering. Like, what's your record in the streets?
I'm still undefeated in the streets. I haven't met my fucking match yet. But
yeah, ever since middle school or what?
Elementary? Man, before that, bro.
Kindergarten.
Early.
Man, early. I started throwing punches in elementary school, to be honest, you know. I came from a tough family, you know. My mom's side of the family, you know, we were pretty much raised in Compton for a minute. You know, Compton was our go town that we would go to because all of my mom's family was from there. And her brothers, my uncles were something else, you know. They were, you know, from the barrio and everything, and all tatted up, you know, gangster looking. And they would always have fight schedules for us. Every time we came into town, we already had fights scheduled with the neighborhood kids and who they had us lined up with. And
man, so you were in the game. They was already promoting you since a young.
Yeah, and they were promoting me, gifting me with ice cream, and you know,
ice cream. Shout out to the 313.
Yeah,
that was the first purse, huh?
That was the first purse of ice creams, and then churros, and then tortas, and then
all that good stuff. Yeah, damn.
Yeah, see, like that's
tortas something. Tortas at that age?
At that age, man, we were on and packing.
Yeah, see, that's like something a lot of people don't talk about. You know, we know the amateur records, the professional record. For example, me, like, I'm probably like 2-0, and then I caught it after that, you know? After that, it was just like, you know, let me just retire and defeat on some Mayweather stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was something we had on the list for you. The second thing, I guess you touched on it a little bit, but what really got you into boxing? Is that something that came from your family? Was it something that you just enjoyed watching as a kid, or what got you into it?
I mean, shout out to my older brother. You know, he's the one who paved the way for me to be where I'm at today. And that's Diego Magdaleno.
Yes, sir. Shout out to you, man.
He paved the way for me. He started out in California. You know, he started out training out there and doing his thing. And then we moved to Vegas, I want to say back in like 95, 96. We moved out here and we started our journey. You know, we used to train. This was like way back when the Golden Gloves Gym was open on, I want to say right there on Lake Mead, right in front of the baseball field. There was a boxing gym right there. And we used to train there, and I used to see all-time greats, you know, like Floyd Mayweather when he was young. I used to see Mike Tyson pull up and, you know, in his fancy cars. You know, just a bunch of boxers always in and out of that gym. And we had this one trainer named Kelsey Banks. And we started off right-handers. And he's like, nah, he's like, I'm going to switch the game for you guys. You guys are going to be southpaws.
Yeah.
So he's like, and one thing, he's like, your power hand's up front. And he's like, we'll just, you know, create the power with your left hand. And that's exactly what he taught us. And from there, like, we never went back to turning right-hander. We always stayed southpaw. And then from there, we went to, you know, Barry's Boxing Gym. And we started our career there. We had a bunch of our amateur fights, and then I turned pro with them for a little bit, and then from there, you know, we went on to the big leagues.
Damn, so it's been a long time brewing. It's a whole journey.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't see that.
No, I mean, I got, to be honest, I got, let's see, I got 22 years in this game already.
Damn.
I started off young, you know, 6 years old when I started. I had 150 amateur fights, you know, 16 losses, 13 national champions. I made a move, you know?
Nah, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Legend in the game, bro.
And then I went to, I made the Olympic team in 2008, early 2009. And then by 2010, I was like fresh out of high school and I turned pro. Wow. Pro at 18.
That early. Who were some of your favorite boxers to watch growing up?
My three all-time favorite were Mike Tyson, because of the heavy shots, always knocked everybody out and was just a piece to watch. And then I got Juan Manuel Marquez.
Yep.
Who was another, you know, favorite and a great counterpuncher.
Yes, sir.
You know, very slick. And he had great movement. And then my third favorite was Prince Nassim Hamed.
Wow. Very underrated. Yeah. Showman.
Showman. Yeah. Flexibility. The way he dodged punches, the way he did things, you know, was incredible to me, because you don't see that. And then from there, you know, went on to Terrible Morales, yeah. You know, Manny Pacquiao, Barrera. Those were all my top favorites.
Yeah. Well, some of those might be dream matchups, would you say, for you? Because they fight like in your category.
Yeah, when they first started, yeah, they were featherweight fighters, and man, that would have been something great.
That
you know,
be crazy.
Get in there and mix it up with them.
Stop right there. 60% of y'all watching this are still not subscribed, man. What's wrong with y'all? Tap that subscribe button. Now back to the episode. We got something we want to get your reaction to. So this is you.
Jessa Hinton here, TopRank.com, and I have Jesse Magdaleno. How do you feel right now?
I feel wonderful, actually. Getting ready for this fight, training hard, and just ready for the Friday.
As of November, it'll be your first year competing as a pro boxer. How's the transition been from amateur to pro?
Oh, it's a big transition. From using 10-ounce gloves and using the headgear to going to no headgear to 8-ounce gloves and fighting harder guys, it's a big transition.
So, when you watch interviews like this, like how does that make you feel? Like, you know, that was when you were first getting introduced as a pro. Now you've had over 30 professional fights. Like, what memories does it bring back?
Yeah, you just brought back a whole bunch of flashbacks, you know? It's a great thing to see, you know, from the time when I started, you know, until today. It's nothing but learning, you know? I learned throughout the years how to, you know, pay my way into the professional game, how to fight these professionals, how to, you know, deal with cuts, deal with injuries, deal with the pressure fighters, the boxers, the, you know, it all taught me how to fight everybody. And but from a young age, I was already sparring pros. I was already, at the age of 15, I was already mixing it up with pros, with guys that, you know, local pros, and then either guys from California. So it was I wasn't like new to the game, but I already knew what I needed to do and how I needed to do it at that time. You know, I was only 18, about to be 19, and it was more excitement. It was more excitement to get in the professional league and show everybody what I was really about.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to think, you know, how far you've came, everything you've accomplished since then. And I saw a few interviews. I'm not sure if it was that one or another one, but you were mentioning how, you know, even at that age, you were having trouble finding sparring partners because you were just, everybody that was in your weight class, you were just kind of getting them out of there too easily.
Yeah. And honestly, still to this day, it's, you know, still hard for me to get sparring partners and get people, you know, to stay in my camp and stay active with me because, you know, I go hard in the gym. You know, when I train, I got to get 100% ready for, you know, my opponent and, you know, for myself, because what they bring to the table and what I bring to the table, you know, I always want to up my opponent, no matter what it is. And I just have a lot of competition in me, you know, when I set my mind to it, like, that's what I'm going to do, and that's how I'm going to do it.
For sure. And, you know, speaking about the amateurs, 120 and 16, U.S. national champion, Golden Gloves national champion. How important is it for fighters that are coming up to get that experience in the amateurs before turning pro? Because it's not something that is as common now. You know, a lot of guys are turning pro real young.
Yeah, and, you know, good for them, you know, good for them, and, you know, best of luck to them. But I think the amateur game is just, it's like school, man. It's like school. It's where you learn. It's where you get all the experience, you know, when you fight people who are going to box, are going to use their speed, or you get people that want to bang it out. And, you know, majority of the times the people like to throw a lot of quick punches and move, because in my time, everything ran off of a point system. Mm-hmm. So every punch landed, yeah, it was a point, a point, a point. And we had scoreboards where, you know, you would see the points go up. And sometimes, you know, it was it was foul when you would land some shots and they wouldn't count it because the judges had to be on point and all that. But it's all a learning experience. You know, I never took my losses, you know, bad, or I never, you know, gave up, you know, just because I lost a tournament or anything. I always said, like, if I lose, you know, the next tournament, I'm going to get them. Because you do see the next, you see the same guys again at the next, at the next tournament. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you always got your get back.
Right.
And, you know, when that came around, you were always ready, or at least I was always ready, you know, to go back and beat them because I didn't want to be beat.
Right. Who were some of your biggest rivals in the amateurs?
Believe it or not, I fought, me and Jose Ramirez fought 4 times.
Oh, shit.
You know, and we went at it. We had some good matches. A couple times I got robbed. Well, I felt like I got robbed.
You have to bring Jose up.
Yeah. Oh, no, he remembers. He should know.
You were robbed.
Yeah, he knows. I had fights with, I don't know if you guys remember Frankie Gomez.
Yep.
He was a good prospect too coming up. Randy Caballero was another one that I fought. Shit. Some other guy named Xavier Montelongo. He was good too. Yeah, all these guys are from California, you know, a lot of California guys. I fought champion too, what's his name? Rashid Warren.
Mm.
You know, I fought him in the USA Nationals. And that's what led me to be on the Olympic team in 2009 and early 2010. And I got to go international. I fought in Italy, fought in Russia. And, you know, it's cool. It's cool to go to travel at a young age and see the world. You know, never in my life I thought I was going to be able to see different countries and different things. But, you know, thank God and, you know, thank my dad for keeping me in the sport.
Yeah. I was fighting in Russia.
It was different, you know. Their style is completely different.
That Soviet style.
Yeah, and they fight long, you know. They're all about the point system out there. They throw a lot of quick shots. To them, it's different, you know. It's not like us, where us USA fighters, we fight more like, you know, like Mexicans,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Especially when you're Mexican, you know, we come forward and we want to bang. And a lot of the times, you know, we out-muscled a lot of our opponents because of, you know, our food and the way we eat and the way we train out here.
Yeah, there's no substitute for tortillas and beans.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, getting adjusted to life as a pro, what are some of the biggest challenges that you had?
Adapting to the time, adapting to the crowds, you know, and the score system. You know, that was always, you know, something I always kept my eye on and made sure that I was always in tip-top shape. You know, to last the rounds, I would always make sure that I've always wanted to be a fan favorite. You know, my early career, I was had what 7-0. I was like 7-0, 7 knockouts. You know, and everything was like first or second round, where a lot of people would get mad at me, like, "Hey, you don't even let us get a chance to drink our beer and enjoy the time. Yeah, yeah. And shit's already over."
Yeah, yeah.
But I've always just went in there, did what I wanted to do.
No, for sure, and then it's different because the strange thing is sometimes you see these guys who have really good amateur careers and then they go to the pros and they have a hard time adjusting, or, you know, they'll do really good in the amateurs and they'll be okay, you know, as a pro, or vice versa. Sometimes you get guys that, you know, they weren't really a standout in the amateurs. They turn pro and they're real good. Is it the power, you think?
And it's still like that. I think it's, adapting to the smaller gloves.
Yeah.
Adapting to not having that headgear, because a lot of people do depend on that headgear.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it does protect you. It does protect a lot of the punches. You don't feel as much. You still get knocked down. You still get knocked out. You know, don't get me wrong, in the amateurs, you still do. But it's different, man. 8-ounce gloves, gauze and tape. And there's some trainers, like my trainer, Jorge Capetillo. He knows how to wrap. He's, you know, a master at wrapping hands. And he makes sure it's nice and solid. And when I go in there, that's what I want my opponent to feel, that nice and solid punch each and every time.
No doubt. And one thing we were thinking about, what we wanted to ask you, was weight cuts. So when you walk around, like, what's your walk around weight when you're not training?
When I'm not training, I'm being a complete fat ass. I get up in the weight. I get up to like the 150s.
Okay.
150 mark. And then, you know, I drop down to 126, or before, when I was dropping down to 122.
Right.
But they were always hard weight cuts for me. It was always, you know, more of a discipline thing.
Hmm.
But coming from a Mexican family,
it's hard,
being,
man,
Mexican. we got the best food.
The best, bro.
The best foods. And It's hard. And that's always been my kryptonite. You know, it's always been something for me that to keep discipline and make sure I'm always, you know, maintaining the right amount of food and eating right.
What's the hardest food to leave when you're cutting weight?
Everything, bro.
Tamales?
Everything. Pizza, tamales, fucking tortas.
Tortas,
you know,
again?
Everything, bro. You know, I love tortas. That's the thing.
Ever since childhood, he's like, man, those tortas, they hit the best when I was a kid.
They were the best, man. They were the best. And, you know, shout out to my uncles for putting me on game at a young age.
It was worth fighting for.
Yeah, always, you know.
Worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's crazy. When you won your championship, right? You faced the Filipino Flash, who is a legend in his own, man.
Most definitely.
You know. But what was the buildup to that fight, right? When you get that call to know, like, hey, you're going to be fighting for the title, what did you feel?
Fuck. I got the chills. I knew my time was coming. I didn't know exactly when it was going to happen. But I always had my eye on Donaire. You know, he was a guy knocking out every Mexican. And I always told my dad, Even my dad, you know, he had his small little doubts at times when I was getting ready, but he would tell me, you know, always stay ready. He only has one punch. You always stay ready. And throughout the whole fight, that's how I built up to it. You know, I just focused on him, only him, and everything that he did. I watched every mistake. I watched every fight, and I just studied him. I studied him like I needed to, and that's what helped me, you know, win that fight and get that victory. But leading up to it, you know, as he was knocking out every Mexican, I was knocking out every Filipino. Mm. I had, you know, two fights before him where guys were Filipinos, and I was able to stop both of them. And I think that's what really gave me the edge and the opportunity to fight him, you know, fight, you know, the killer. And when they said it, man, I was the happiest person ever, because I was like, this is where I'm going to change my life.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then you robbed him.
A lot of people
were saying that, but I'm like, how?
Oh, the Twitter at that time, man, was insane, bro. Yeah. They had me one round. It was like already like the ninth round, and that was probably like the only round I won. You know, on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I gave Donaire, you know, a boxing class.
No,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just outboxed him, and
undoubtedly
there was no need to stay in there and bang with him. It's like, why bang with him? Why bang with a banger when you could do other things and have, you know, have fun with them?
No, so, for sure.
As an athlete, right, you're always in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
How do you ever feel like social media messes with your mind, or do you just like try and get off of it? Or because what is it, there's some athletes, you know, I mean the NBA, who've been affected by comments online.
It's definitely a distraction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big distraction. It's something that would take your mind out of the game. Yeah, it could make you chill out, relax a little bit, but there's things on there that, you know, we shouldn't be looking at. Like, there's a lot of food content on there, you know, there's women, there's, you know, just bullshit, you know, a lot of bullshit that makes you, you know, distracted, and then you go into the gym not, you know, thinking right, or it throws you back a little bit when you should be focusing on your fighter or on your opponent and training.
See a torta and you're like, oh
fuck, I want to fuck it up, you know?
What's good, y'all? This year we really want the pod to blow up, but we need your help to make it happen. So stop right there, go drop a like, drop a comment down below. Now back to the episode.
How does it feel, would you say, that like after you won that fight, going on Twitter afterwards, what you thought was a masterclass of a performance and not the public eye?
Honestly, I didn't care. You know,
that's what's up.
They raised my hand, and I didn't care what people had to say, you know, and I knew in my heart I won. Even when they were announcing it, when they gave the scorecards, in the back of my mind, I still had that doubt. Like, fuck.
Because you never know.
You never know.
And then it's always like the champion's advantage, right?
Most definitely. But, and at that time, nobody knew me.
Yeah.
You know, I was real.
Like a raw prospect.
Yeah, and I just came up out of nowhere and fucking dyed my hair blonde, and I want people are going to know who I am.
Yeah.
So, at that time, like, I really didn't care. I was just so on a high that I never wanted to come down from, you know, because it was something special for me. It was a dream since the age of 6. I'm telling you, since elementary school, I would go into elementary classes when we would have not career day, what was it called? Like a talent show or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I would always bring my trophies, and the teachers would be like, where'd you steal that at? Or where'd you take that? You know, whose is that? That's mine. Oh, you're a fighter? Yeah, I'm gonna be a champion.
Yeah, watch
day.
Out.
Yeah,
yes.
I'll be
saying something. Yeah.
How'd I do on that test?
Yeah, you gonna give me an A or what?
Nah,
but that's something I always carried with me, you know, and I always told myself since a kid that, you know, one day I was gonna make it, and you know, thankfully I did.
Yeah, thankfully, man. But in that fight, in the build-up, I don't know if you remember one of the press conferences, he does his war cry.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, bro, I remember like it was yesterday. And it was cool to have my brother there. My older brother was there, and he clowned on him.
Yeah, he did.
He clowned on him.
Really?
Yeah. He clowned on him.
I don't know if y'all have seen it, but it's like, so they're sitting across. You know how they do the boxing press conferences?
Yeah.
He gets up, and he does his war cry, and it's like the cringiest thing. Like, nobody reacts. And then his brother goes, what does he say? He's like, Jesse.
No, he's like, woo! He screams really loud, and then everybody just looks at my brother, and he's like, all right, champ. It just like, it made me laugh. It made me realize that, you know, at that time, Donair was trying to get in my head. He was trying to like, be the bigger person and scare me, because I'm obviously I was young. And but that just fed fuel to my fire. And I was just like, man, you don't know what's coming.
Yeah. Was that your toughest fight, or do you think you've had a tougher fight in your professional career?
No, I think my toughest fight was my first loss with Isaac Dogbo, you know, because that was the first time I ever touched a canvas, you know, multiple times. It was the first time I ever, you know, been hit and not knew where the fuck I was at. That was the first time I ever felt any kind of power and, like, not know how to react. And there was a couple rounds that, you know, even from, like, I want to say after he knocked me down from, like, the sixth to, like, the eighth round that, like, I don't remember. And it's crazy, you know, it's crazy because it's like, oh shit, I was still into that fight, you know, even mid 11th round, and I was still fighting and not knowing what I was doing. But I think that was my toughest one, because I told my team at that time that I couldn't make the weight no more, you know, like after the Donair fight and my first title defense, I told my team, like, I can't make this weight no more. This weight is really like messing me up. I'm cutting down a lot of weight. My body's growing. And honestly, nobody listened to me. Everybody was like, no, you can still make the weight. You're a little guy. You can still. I'm like, bro, like, I'm coming in like 150 now, 155. Like, I'm cutting a shitload of weight. Like, my body's just expanding. Everything I ate and drank, my body was like a sponge. It'd blow up. So with that being said, you know, like, they just didn't listen. And nobody was like really paying attention to what I had to say. So when I went into that Dogbo fight the night before the weight cut, bro, like, if you guys would have seen me, you guys would have been like, how the fuck this kid last 11 rounds? I was in a bathtub with Epsom salt, alcohol, you know, draining every ounce of water that was ever was in me. When I got on that scale, bro, I was already...
Like a zombie,
you know? I was, you know, ready to faint. I was ready, you know, to collapse. But, you know, thank God that I didn't, and I was able to put on a show for the people still.
How does that feel, like, learning the fundamentals? Like I mentioned, even the amateurs, it's just like school, right? But the first time getting knocked down, how easy or how hard was it to remember?
At that time, bro, to be honest, I think, not just for me, I think for everybody that, you know, that's a fighter, I think when you get dropped, you forget about everything. You want to get your get back. You want to do what he did to you, you know? And when he put me down, that's the first thing I wanted to do. I wanted to knock him out. And I kid you not, when the ref was counting, I was on the floor and I was like, wait, I'm on the floor? So I get up and the referee always tells you, are you okay? You ready to continue? I said, don't worry about me. Worry about him, because I'm about to beat the shit out of him. And when he said box, I don't remember, but rewatching the fight and stuff, I'm right there telling the guy, like, come on, bro, like, let's fucking bang it out. You know, I didn't care about the fundamentals no more. It was just about, I wanted to knock you out. And, you know, but now, from that day to now, I learned, you know, I learned to, like, get up, dust myself off, and, you know, stay on the game plan and stay, you know, moving forward and doing what we practice on in the gym. You know, it's a big learning lesson for me ever since that day. It made me, you know, get better and better.
And it's a big deal, no, because you don't train for that, or you can't practice that. Like, getting knocked down, I mean, I guess it can happen in sparring, but it's not something you train for because you're not expecting to go down. So when it happens, especially the first time, not only has it never happened, but like you have the crowd around you, you have your corner yelling at you, yeah. The referee, like I can imagine, like just you're like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. And at that time, to be honest, it sucked. It sucked. The crowd sucked. There was no Latinos there. We were in Philly. It was a dead crowd, to be honest. Like yeah. It wasn't nothing to be like, even when I walking out, like nobody was screaming like what I was used to, like when I fight here on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Nobody was really chanting for the Mexican. Like, so it's like, I'm in a different, like, I felt like I was in a different time zone. Mm. And, you know, that all played a factor because I like to feed off the crowd, you know, I like yeah. to hear the crowd and hear them scream and hear the oohs, the ahs. I love that, you know, especially when I'm landing the shot. Even when they land the shot on me and I hear the crowd, I'm like, all right, bro, I'm coming. So be ready.
Right. But yeah, just to know, like, you don't even know where you are. That's crazy to me because like I've watched boxing for a long time, MMA too. And even like, as much as I would say, I know more than like the average common person, you don't really know like the level, like people die. Like I think there was just an Irish boxer that passed away recently. And like, you know, they have these like hemorrhages in the brain, like the amount of damage
that
you
take. Brain bleeds, all that.
Yeah. It's... The amount of damage that you take as a fighter is like no joke. And like, we obviously see people, you know, they get cut up, but we assume it's all surface level, but just like how much of a mental toll does that take on you after a fight, just having all that damage inflicted on you?
It's a lot, you know. I have a funny joke with you know, with my kid and, you know, everybody. I'm like, yeah, I'm like Frankenstein right now, you know. I got cuts on the nose, the eyes, the eyebrows, you know, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Those are my warrior scars. Those are my battle scars, you know. But when you're in there and you're cut up and you have your face is bleeding or whatever, like, you don't even feel it. You don't even know what's like that it's there, especially when you have a good cut man, you know, good people in your corner to take care of the cuts and stop the bleeding. You know, that's what really matters. That's what really counts. Like at that time I had, I don't know if you guys remember the cut man named Miguel, mm-hmm. the older cat, Argentinian guy, one of the best cut mans in the game, you know? And, he was my cut man for the Donaire fight and he stopped the bleeding. I mean, I had a deep ass cut over my left
yeah,
eye,
I remember
you
that.
Know, and mm-hmm. it was all caused by a head collision. And to be honest, those are worse than getting punched. When you bump heads, mm-hmm. it's like bumping your head against like a brick wall.
Oh my god.
And
oh, I can feel that.
I even when me and Donaire clashed heads, it rattled me. Like I was like, oh shit, I saw, you know, him double and I was like, oh damn. So I had a box and the first thing I did was touch my eye because it hurt.
Yeah.
I was like, shit. And I seen the blood, I'm like, oh fuck. I wonder how bad it is.
Yeah, especially as a southpaw, right?
Yeah, southpaw right-handers are always clashing.
Mm, the feet get tangled, all that?
Yeah, and then going to the hospital, getting, you know, 27 stitches over the eye I was like, oh shit. Like, damn. This is crazy. Like, I'm really getting stitched up right now.
Yeah, but I guess like in the fight, the adrenaline kind of covers for it a lot, right?
Yeah, you don't feel nothing. Mm. Like, what I felt, it was, it just felt cold. It felt cold, and then I remember hearing it was a pop, is what I heard. I heard a pop, and that's when I felt all the blood. Yeah. But even when the blood fell, I thought it was sweat until I touched it. And then I was like, oh, shit, fucking bleeding. I got to box this, dude. I got to really move, because if not, you know, it's going to be a big factor. But like I said, what a good cut man and a person that knows what he's doing, they stop it completely.
That's a real good question, I guess, that a lot of people don't talk about. What makes a good cut man in boxing?
A guy that studies, you know, that studies the game, that knows his medicines, that knows how to deal with that type of situation without being scared or without being, you know, nervous, because you get nervous up there, you know. I know the coaches get nervous, their adrenaline's pumping, you know, and they can only give you instructions. They don't know what you're feeling, but they can only give you instructions, and I know... They feel it. They feel something for you because they're in the gym with you day in and out.
Yeah.
So it's more of a family thing, you know. So, but having a good cut man is always key in your corner. And you know, as long as the cut mans know what they're doing and they study and they know their medicines, it takes them a long way. It takes them a far way.
I think it's a good point that you bring up, that like you don't want your cut man to be nervous, because I don't want to have a cut on me and all of a sudden I look up and my cut man's like just like shaking. I'm like, bro, like I'm in the fight, like what are you what are you doing?
He's like, bro, you're not cut.
I'm cut,
help me.
Definitely. What are some of the biggest life lessons that boxing has taught you?
Discipline, bro. Taught me love. It taught me a lot, you know. It taught me about love. It taught me about being disciplined. It taught me about, you know, being a hard worker. It taught me to be focused. It taught me, you know, to be a person to give back. It taught me a lot of things, you know, because without boxing, you know, I'm not saying I don't know where I would be at. I know where I would be at if I didn't have boxing. But it's something that I feel like everybody should try, you know, because it's a different type of feeling. It's something that it gets you ready for battle. You know, whenever you do fight or ever get in a street fight, you're not nervous to throw hands or defend yourself because you already learn, you know, the process to it, the ways to deal with those kind of situations. And that's another thing too. It helps you like de-escalate a lot of shit because there's people out there, you know, that talk a lot. And it's always the quiet ones that you gotta like, hey, this guy knows something.
Yeah.
You know, why are you so quiet? Exactly. Why are you so quiet while everybody else is burning? Like, but it teaches you to be calm and all that. And that's something that it's really taught me, to really be laid back. And I bring that into my personal life because I'm not like the rest of these fighters that, you know, are on media. You know, I like to be private. I like to be laid back. I like to watch and visualize everything before I go and do something.
Yeah. Where would you be without boxing?
Honestly, I'll probably be a mechanic. You know, I love cars. I've used to build a lot of Hondas.
Yeah.
That was my shit when I was younger. I used to build motors, build, you know, a lot of stuff. And that was one thing that, besides boxing, that really had me always, you know, on my A game, because I've always liked to race. I've always liked to have the fast car and do all that type of stuff. And Fast and the Furious was one of my favorite movies, and when that movie came out, you know, I've always wanted a Honda.
Hell yeah.
So I think without boxing, I think I would have been, you know, a mechanic or something like that.
What is it? With the new Kendrick album, right? He got a GNX on there. What do you think about that car?
Oh, the GNX is a beautiful car. You know, that's a classic right there. It's a classic. It has, you know, a lot of power. It's a V8, and you don't see those type of cars anymore.
No, you don't.
And I wish they would remake another one.
Yeah, that would be sick. Now, there's a lot that goes into boxing, you know. For one, you almost have to dedicate your all into this, right? It's all or nothing because...
I wouldn't say almost. You
do, right?
You have to. Yeah. You have to. This is a sport that a lot of people think, oh, we could go play boxing. You can't play boxing.
You can't play.
It's like a light switch. It could turn on and turn off your lights at any given moment. You know, one guy could change your life. And it goes back to, you know, the head injuries. Like, there's so much that you take as a fighter, so many, you know, injuries, so many, you know, head trauma. There's, you know, a lot of shit that I worry about as I get older, you know, like, I don't want to deal with CTE. I don't want to deal with, you know, any type of like Muhammad Ali did and yeah, it's scary, bro. It's scary to think about. And but still, I don't give up on the sport. The sport has, you know, given me everything, and, you know, I'm giving my everything back to it. But it's something you got to dedicate yourself to and really, really give it your all. Because if you don't, you know, there's always a next bigger and better person that's going to come out and give you that fight.
Right. So everything that goes into boxing, you having to dedicate everything in your life, sacrifice a lot to go into the sport, you know, suffering through all the fights in the amateurs, transitioning into pros, all the grueling weight cuts, you know, your first loss, your first title, through everything from the beginning until now, what has been your toughest mental battle?
Myself. After my first loss, I went into depression, you know, and it got to the point where I wanted to, you know, off myself, because it was something I wasn't used to. I didn't lose. I had a long, like, years, like, I want to say like a good maybe 10 years where I didn't lose, where I didn't know that feeling anymore. Mm-hmm. I was always on the win, knocking people out, fighting the best guys and, you know, making them look like nothing. And that played a big factor when I lost, because everybody left, bro. Like, I had friends, I had people that were there in the gym with me. I had people always calling me, always, you know, texting me, checking up on me, to nothing.
Damn.
And it's like shit. And I remember there's one fighter, he's an Argentinian guy. He fought Chavez. I forget his name. What's his name? They call him Maravilla. Shit, so many fighters, bro. But anyways, this guy said one day, he was like, when I won my title, I had over 1,000 phone calls. He said, the day I lost, I had one phone call, and that was my mom. And that always stuck with me. And the day I lost, that's exactly what it was. It was nobody but my family. My mom, my dad, calling, checking up, I was good. And it just really stuck with me. It made me open my eyes to the world and really, really move differently, you know, with life and myself, because I knew at any given moment, people were just going to vanish. So it made me just always work harder, always made me be, you know, private to myself and just do things alone. And I learned how to be that lone wolf and really do everything on my own and show everybody what I was about.
What role did your family play, you know, getting you through that loss? Because, you know, after being used to not losing for such a long time and being at the top of the world, to lose not only hurts you, but you have people that depend on you. And I'm sure that you felt in some way, unfairly to yourself, you probably felt like you let them down.
I most definitely did. You know, I felt like, you know, even to this day, I feel like that. I feel like I should have listened more. I should have, you know, there's always these shoulda, coulda, wouldas, you know, leading up to the fight and leading up to that moment. But it was difficult. But, you know, thankfully I have a strong family. You know, I have a strong family. I have, you know, my mom and dad who are, you know, there day in and out. And they don't give up. Even to this day when I fight, my mom's always telling me, you better be ready because I know what you can do. She's like, I have nothing but, you know, positive vibes for you. She's always telling me, you know, you're gonna go out there and kill it. Don't ever, you know, doubt yourself. And my dad's always been there to help me put in the work. So my dad's 68. He still runs 5-6 miles.
Damn.
He still does his thing, you know.
I can't do that.
It's crazy, you know, but yeah. It's just the mentality that my dad always showed us and always, you know, led to be a great example for us. And I think that's why I don't give up. That's why I don't stop, because I feel like if I stop, I let him down.
Yeah. Well, in a way, like, I'm sure everything you've accomplished has far exceeded any expectations they probably ever had for you. Like, to see their kid grow up and become a world champion, like, bro, like, what percentage of humans in history have achieved what you've achieved?
Yeah.
And that's a thing that you don't see. Like, you compare yourself to the previous you, because you hadn't lost, you're like, damn, like I failed. But look at everything you've accomplished. Like, you're on top of a mountain that 99.99% of humans ever will never know what that feels like.
Yeah.
So I feel like you shouldn't feel down upon yourself. Like, you've inspired a generation of boxing, like people from this city that look up to you. Just like, you know, I did a little bit of homework, like, leading up into the fight, and everybody I reached out to had nothing but good things to say about you.
That's dope, man. You know, and that's the things that I don't see, you know?
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm not big on media. I'm not big on, like, putting myself out there like that. I've always been a quiet person, a private person, you know? That's always been me. And, you know, it's good to hear that. It's good to hear that people still, you know, ride with me and, you know, have that expectation for me, you know? And, and that's why I keep grinding. That's why I keep doing it. I got nephews right now four nephews that are in boxing, and they're some killers.
Oh,
they're
damn. They're some killers,
you know? I got Julian, I got JoJo, I got Carlos, and I got one that just had his first amateur fight at 10 years old. You know, his name is Noah. And these kids eat, sleep, shit, boxing. And to see that and to be, you know, with them and for them to have me, you know, it's dope. It's dope because, like, I get to teach them the things that, certain things that I wasn't taught, you know, exactly. That I had to learn
right
fighting. And You know, I'm grateful that they didn't have to go through the obstacles that I went through. And the day they go pro, I'll make sure to manage them right, teach them right, and make sure they don't get screwed over, because I've been screwed over a bunch of times. Yeah. You know, I've had managers, ex-managers that robbed money from me. I had ex-managers that, you know, took everything from me and benched me and had me weighed out. And that played a lot of my factor when COVID hit. You know, from that, I was going on fighting all the time to fighting once a year, maybe once the 2 years being after being benched. And, you know, that's where my other two losses come from, because I didn't
have that rhythm anymore.
That rhythm, yeah. And it's what we call it, ring rust.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people are like, oh, that ain't real. No, it's real.
No,
when
yeah.
You get
yeah.
in there, you gotta feel the adrenaline again. You gotta feel that love from the crowd. You gotta, you know.
You know what's crazy? The people that say that, right? We all have jobs. I promise you, if you take 2 years off of your job, you won't know how to do shit. Let alone stepping into a ring where the next motherfucker's trying to rip your head off.
Yeah.
How do you think ring rust isn't a thing? You know what I mean?
No, exactly. Yeah. Especially when you fight another person who's been active.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Training all the time, who's, you know, fought three times, you know, in the last 6 months. It's like, shit, you got to catch up to that. And, you know, it's hard to catch up to that. You really have to be on your A game when it comes to that type of stuff. But, you know, things happen, you know, in training. I've entered a bunch of fights with injuries, you know, hand injuries. I've entered the fight, you know, not 100% ready, but I still took it, because at the end of the day, you know, I've always been a guerrero and I always wanted to, you know, show everybody what I was.
A professional at the end of the day. Yeah. So we mentioned the Donaire headbutt or head collision. You had a fight that got stopped because of an elbow. And then you also had another fight where you got punched in the balls a lot of times.
From round one to round 10, bro.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And what's the crazy thing is that's another story I don't tell people. You know, that when that fight happened, I pissed blood for 2 days.
Oh.
And it's fucking crazy. Like, I was like,
how do you react? Like,
fuck, do I go to the doctor? Or do I wait this shit out? Like, you know? Do I pop Tylenol? Like,
I thought I should fix it. Am I, we good after that?
What do? I take a shot of tequila? Or, you know, take a bong grip? Nah, but no, like, those are things that happen, and people are like, oh, you know, the shots didn't look that hard, or, you know, even my last fight when I fought Brandon Figueroa,
yeah.
I got low blowed, and that fucker hit me hard in the balls.
Speed back to the wrong place, though.
Yeah, the referee told me straight up, you have 5 minutes, you know, to take your time.
Yeah.
Hurry up.
How do I hurry up 5 minutes? Hurry up, yeah.
Yeah, how do I hurry up 5 minutes? Oh, you good to go? Let's go then. Come on. Like, bro, I'm about to throw up. Like, my stomach hurts.
Yeah.
You know, you ever been hit in the nuts?
It's the worst, bro.
Oh, it's horrible.
You feel that
pain. Worst. And the thing is, like, dude, these are people that know how to punch.
Yeah.
I got punched in the balls by accident by somebody who, like, maybe went like that.
A little tap?
Yeah, bro. This dude is throwing, you know,
uppercuts.
Yes. These are 8 ounce gloves.
Yes.
Hard-ass hand wraps. Like, it takes a toll on you.
Nah,
I mean, I can't help out there, man.
Yeah, just fucking squirt a bunch of water right there. You know, cold water. But it's crazy. And those are the battles that you got to fight through. You got to, you know, push it through. The next round you go in there, you're like, fuck, my stomach still hurts. You know, don't hit me in my stomach. But it's the fight game.
Nah.
The fight game.
You got to thug it out.
Yeah, most definitely. And there's a lot of times you're like, man, like, fuck, I don't want to thug it out. But you have to. Right. You know, it's your life on the line. You got to do it.
Thank y'all so much for making it this far into the episode. If you're enjoying the episode, go ahead and drop a comment down below and let us know who you want us to interview next. You on your Instagram, well, you train with Capetillo. Capetillo is a huge coach out here in Vegas, man. Shout out to Coach
Capetillo.
Shout out Capetillo,
man. That guy is
He trains special, everybody, man.
He's a special guy.
Boxing, MMA, striking, like, he does it, everything. So, there's been a lot of fighters that you've met, right? You on your Instagram, you've met Canelo, you've met
Masvidal, Showtime Pettis, Moreno,
Julio Cesar Chavez, yeah,
Brian Suchet. You know, I've met a lot of fighters, a lot of, you know, different people, a lot of, you know, big stars. And honestly, it's just motivation for me.
Nah, facts. Well, what I wanted to ask you was, on our first episode when we interviewed Holland, the one that linked us up, I don't remember if it was on the episode or before, but we were talking about fighter aura. He mentioned like sometimes like he'll see guys out and he'll just kind of go say what's up, but you know, that kind of, you know, at the corner of his eye, he's trying to like size him up, seeing like how does it feel to like stand in front of this dude? Like, who have you met that has the greatest fighter aura?
I would say the one that made me like, oh shit, you know, I would say Canelo, you know, because he's not too much of a big guy. He's not like in height wise, you know, he's a stocky Mexican. He's just a powerful person, you know, and just seeing him being in, you know, in the same room with him, you know, you feel his presence. You feel, you know, the champion, you know who he is. And, but like I said, those are just, even though that I'm still a world champion and I've accomplished, you know, that title, I still look up to him like, and fuck, yeah. One day I want to still make it to, you know, the big leagues like him. Mm-hmm. And just having that aura, having him around, you know, when he comes into town and gets ready for fight camps and stuff, it's something that it boosts me up. It makes me want to, you know, even train harder and be a better person, a better fighter, you know, in and out. But like Holland said, yeah, there's a lot of, even going into like normal places, you know, you look at everybody and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll be his ass. I'll be his ass. You know, even though they're twice my size.
Right.
They're, you know, you feel it because as a fighter, you know what you could do. You know your hands are deadly weapons, you know. And I've been in a ton of street fights. I've been in a ton of, you know, those type of fights and those type of experiences. And it just, you know, makes you stronger in the type of way.
Right, yeah, because we were talking about sort of the difference between a boxer and a fighter. Like, sometimes you'll see a guy and, like, you'll know, like, maybe it'll be a champ or someone that's ranked, and you're like, oh, yeah, you're a good boxer. Like, I know you know how to fight in a mm-hmm. ring, but if I saw you on the street, it'd be a whole different story. Like, has that ever happened?
That's happened to me my entire life.
Yeah?
I've had friends that have been around, and my friends would be getting, like, shit talked to. But then that person had just come directly to me. Like, bro, I didn't even say nothing. Why are you bothering me for? What did I do? You know? And then I piece them up, and then everybody's like, oh, shit. Like, what did this kid know? Like, I told you, bro, leave me alone. Like, I'm in the back for a reason. But it's a lot of times, even still to this day, I get people that, you know, sometimes I feel like, oh, they know me.
Mm-hmm.
But deep down, they're like, they're dogging me. They're, you know, sizing me up. And I'm like, why are you guys sizing me up? What am I doing? You know, I'm just chilling. But
man, you're world champion, man. Yeah, if I was in my size, I'd be like, hey, what's up, bro? That corner of my eye, I'd be like,
yeah, that's what I mean. But it throws me off because you know, you know me, or you say what's up, or are you gonna come at me swinging? Like,
right.
What is it? But either way, I'm always ready. So
thanks.
Have you ever been in like about a fight and then someone realizes like, oh no, like it looks like he actually knows how to fight, and someone like backs off? They're like, you know what? I'm good. Like I'm gonna move on.
A lot of times, bro. There's because I'm a big soccer fan too. I play soccer too. Well, not anymore, but I used to play a lot, mm-hmm. you know. And a lot of the times, you get the drunk players and you get the players that like always talking shit, and then they want to do something. And then there's been times where like we're about to get down, and then the coach or another player be like, no, you fight everybody else but that guy. Don't fight him. You know, he's a professional.
Yeah, they already know.
And then everybody's like, oh shit, a professional at what? He's a boxer.
Like, you know, whooping your ass.
So yeah, there's been a lot of times where, you know, people have been saved. Because when I was younger, I was reckless. You know, I didn't really care. Like,
give no warnings. Yeah. He said it's on go.
Anybody can get these hands.
Yeah, you know, even though we can get in trouble,
for sure, yeah.
You know, we get our mm-hmm. license revoked, we could get, you know, penalized, even to the point they take our license away, you know,
and
we won't be able to fight no more. And that's always been in the back of my mind, so I've always, you know, made the right moves, done the right things. I always had people that knew how to defend themselves around me, so if anything goes down, they were able to, you know, help me out.
You're probably just like, get one in, be like, I ain't doing nothing.
Yeah. Gotta throw to the body. That's the spot they don't see.
Facts, yeah. When can we expect to see you in the ring again?
So I haven't dropped the news yet, but I will drop the news today. I will be back March 22nd in San Bernardino, California, fighting a 10-round fight, making my way up back again to the world title class.
All right.
Do you have an opponent?
Yeah, I have an opponent. His name is Luis Correa. You know, he's good fighter too, come forward fighter, throws a lot of punches, got balls. So it's going to be, you know, a fan favorite fight.
Oh, hell yeah. That's
San Bernardino?
What's up.
Yeah, San Bernardino.
You might have to pull up.
Yeah. Road trip?
Have to pull up. Road trip out there, yeah.
Oh, man.
I got you guys on tickets.
Hey. That's love. That's love.
Yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah.
But that's my next one. I'm excited. I'm in training camp already for it. You know, you guys have seen my post here and there. But, yeah, that's our main focus right now.
Hell yeah. We're going to get that victory, man.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course. Awesome. Yeah. That's the thing. I got to get my get back, especially after my last fight, you know. I dealt with a lot of shit, like I said, you know, I was still dealing with depression, I was still dealing with a lot of doubts with myself, and, but with everything like life, I rode with the dices, and I said, hey, you know, I could still do it, especially with my last performance, you know, I was another bad weight cut that I had, I was out for 2 years, in my head, I was already retired, I didn't want to fight no more, I, you know, picked up another career, another thing that I wanted to do. And I was already like setting my ways, like, you know, I already did what I did, like, it's cool. But then you get that phone call, you get that
itch.
You get that itch, and then you see the money, and then you're like, all right, just one more time.
I guess you got me.
One more time, let me go. And with the performance with the world champion, like Brandon Figueroa, and I was honestly playing with him, you know, catching his glove, touching his shoes. Mm-hmm. I was talking shit to him in between rounds. Like, mm-hmm. Just made me realize who, like, where I belong. And it you know, flamed up again. It like burned that fire up in my stomach again. And I told myself, like, this time I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna do it the right way, and I'm gonna do it a smart way, and I'm gonna just stay in the gym and always be ready for whatever comes.
Hell yeah. And you mentioned your nephews, you know, obviously we hope you have, you know, we make it back to that world title again. But post boxing, do you see yourself as someone that's gonna stay around in the game of boxing, maybe coach, or are you someone that's just going to, you know, leave it to the side and say, that was that chapter of my life, now I'm going to do something else?
No, most definitely. I think that's the next chapter of my life is becoming a coach, you know? I have a lot of knowledge in this game. I've been in this game, like I said, 22 years, you know, and I've ate, slept, shit boxing, you know, and I still do to this day. And if I could get my knowledge and share my knowledge with these kids, or, you know, not even just with my nephews, just with any fighter, mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. You know, there's times where me and Capatillo are in the gym and we have, you know, other fighters in their training. I give them advice. I give them, you know, little tips and things, you know, things they could work on, things they see. And they understand. They understand where I come from. They understand what I'm saying. It's not like, oh, that guy don't know what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. He's just talking.
Yeah. No, they really feedback and they're like, man, thank you. Like, well, you told me it helped me. So that just gives me, you know, the knowledge and everything to, like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. Once I quit, once I'm done and I'm retired, I'm gonna open up a gym. I want to do it for the kids, not for anybody else. I just want to do it for the kids. I want to see what Vegas has and who comes out of Vegas, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. Cause Vegas is a boxing town, but in terms of like people coming out here, I feel like we should have way more people that come out of here. Like, we do have our fair share, right? And everybody trains here, but I feel like people like you have really set a landmark in boxing. You've made your mark in boxing that now people from here can look up to you and say, like, oh, like, now I'm training with Jesse. Now I'm here. He's putting me on game in terms of cutting weight, what kind of manager I should have, like, what's a good deal, what's a bad deal, and just like how to be a professional.
Yeah, and like I said, that's something boxing has taught me. You know, boxing taught me how to read contracts, right? Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I'd never even thought about even reading a contract or having a contract in front of me. And, you know, having, you know, people that help you out and people to, you know, feed knowledge to you, like, hey, make sure they take only this percentage and not that percentage. Mm-hmm. Make sure they're giving you what you need.
Yeah.
And, you know, what they promise you, because boxing's a lonely sport, bro. It's a lonely sport. You know, one day you're up and the next day you're a walking ghost.
So was there ever a moment where you're like reading a contract and you're like, ah, you almost got me? Or like, you ever feel like?
A bunch of times, you know, and there was times I was fault at it, you know, well, not at fault, but like, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know because I didn't have that guidance. I didn't have people to be like, hey, watch out for this, watch out for that, you know? Like my first promotional company, Top Rank, you know, they put me, I had an extension, so many extensions with them. It went from a 4-year contract to wind up being like close to a 10-year contract. off of one contract.
Yeah,
that's big. And it's like, yeah, it's like, dude, where's, you know, the extra pay that everybody else is getting? I see everybody else making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I'm still stuck on, you know, barely making to 100.
Like, is that because they renegotiate, but yours is just an extension?
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt like they knew what they had. They knew what type of fighter I was, and they just didn't want to see me grow. Like, they just wanted me, like, even the Donaire fight, like, a lot of people don't know, I was there to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't supposed to win. I was supposed to get knocked out.
Yep.
Thrown in the trash can, and that's it. You're never gonna hear a Jesse Magdaleno again. And I shocked the fucking world.
You said, you know what? I got my own plan.
Yeah, but I, like I tell everybody, it's like they say, it was a gift and a curse. A gift because that's something that I trained my whole life for, and it cursed me because after that fight, like, everybody turned away from me, you know? And I was expecting, like, every other fighter get the ring moment. I had shit that I wanted to say. I had shit that I felt that I wanted to say, but they didn't give me that spotlight.
Yeah.
They rushed me out the ring.
I remember that.
You know, kicked me out, like, come on, next fight. And I was like, damn, like, I'm not going to talk to the...
I just won a world title.
Yeah.
Like, let me talk my shit. Like, come on.
But nobody. Everybody was just like, boom, it was quiet. Yeah.
So... in that moment, what did you want to say? Like, what were you going to say?
Man, I wanted to thank my family. I wanted to thank my mom and dad, especially them, because, like I said, they thugged it out with me, you know, day in and out. But not just me, but just, I come from a family of six. I got three older sisters and two brothers. My sisters didn't do any sports, you know, and me and my two brothers, you know, we boxed, we fought. And to see my dad get out of work from 5 a.m. to 3 p.m., have his rest, and then be in the gym at 5 o'clock, it's like, man, I can't let this man down. Like, I got to keep going, you know? So that only made me, you know, stronger, and it only made me hungrier to get where I needed to get to. And I just wanted to thank them, you know? I wanted to thank my team at the time. I wanted to thank, you know, just the people that were around me, the people that always fed off positive vibes to me. But like I said, I wasn't given that moment. I wasn't given, I felt like everything was crushed after they raised my hand, because like I said, I wasn't there to win. They wanted me to lose. I was supposed to lose because I was, like I said, I was coming up on my contract. And that's a lot of things people don't know. My contract was coming to an end already with Top Rank. Winning that world title, and that's the shit that people miss in the contracts. It's like when the promotional company gives you a world title fight, it's an automatic extension. Automatic extension, because you're their champion.
Right.
So now how they're gonna be like, oh, you became world champion,
now you can go sign somewhere else. Yeah,
when you know every other promotional company is gonna be like,
yeah,
let's pay.
And that's the fucked up part, because that's when you can make your money, because that's when you actually have a bargaining chip.
Yeah.
So, damn,
you take away all the leverage that way.
When they did me wrong. That's why I always say it was a gift and a curse winning that title. You know, thank God I won the title, but like, fuck, it came with a lot of hate.
Yeah,
a lot of hate, and that's what they did to me. You know, it was a lot of extensions, and there was a lot of times the contract was supposed to be up, and they just kept extending it. Any little thing they found, they kept extending it. Until I got on my A game, and I was like, man, they ain't gonna do this shit to me no more. Like, I really gotta read the contracts. I gotta take it to a lawyer. I gotta do all these things, because if not, they're gonna keep screwing me over, and they're gonna keep paying me whatever they feel like paying me.
Yeah.
Man. So there's a lot of shit that, like, and that's why, like, another reason why I'm private, I really don't speak about, you know, like, the downfalls and stuff like that. You know, I had managers stealing from me. I had managers making up fake fights just to extend my contract, just to do those type of dirty deeds to cover their ass and to make sure I stay, you know, because they knew what type of fighter I was.
So there were moments where they would say, like, oh, we have this fighter ready for you on this day. And they were like, oh, actually, never mind. That's not happening anymore.
Well, it's because it's fucked up, because you got to think, the promotional company's trying to make money off you. Your manager's trying to make money off you. Like, everybody's trying to make money off you. And at the end, it's like, you have to pay for your coach. You have to pay, like, if you have a nutritionist, gym fees, equipment fees,
everything.
Like if you get injured, you got to pay
your and car, it's like
your car, your rent, your family, everything. And then so you think about like you get a purse, but then it's like everybody gets a cut, and then they're like, here, yeah, this is what you get at the end.
And yeah. I had a manager ripping me off, bro. He was ripping me off, like taking a huge amount of percentage out of my checks.
Yeah.
And there was times we even went to court. Like I tried to fight, you know, to get out of this contract with this guy, and right, you know, thankfully we got out. But there was times that fights, like there's a lot of shit, like Navarrete. I was supposed to fight Navarrete at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they offered me $100,000 to fight him. $100,000. When I found out the real number, I was like, where the fuck is the rest of the money at?
Oh my god.
The fight was scheduled for $350,000.
Yeah,
you know, against a killer, against a guy, right, you know, who came, yeah, from the 122 pounds to 126, because at that time I just had moved up. And I was like, wait, where's the rest of the fucking money at?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you like, they already negotiated their part.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, he was still taking a percentage out of that pay. So double dipping, dirty, I'm like, wow.
Nah, that's actually nuts.
So yeah, it is nuts. And that's the knowledge I give to these kids. That's right, the knowledge I give to like the upcoming professionals. Like, make sure you read your fucking contract. Make sure you have a second part, you know, a second person reading that contract, whether it's a lawyer or somebody who knows contracts. Because in this fight game, it's a lonely sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of wolves out there and they attack.
How do you find those lawyers though? Because I always hear people have like lawyers, but I'm like, in my mind, I'm like Len Lerner. We got like someone in town that does like accidents, like
yeah, even then, feels,
yeah,
even
but
then,
they know how to read. They know contracts, how to read contracts.
Oh, they do.
They know those certain words. There's certain big words they use. There's certain things that they use. That's
like
code,
like the little loopholes they try to hide.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah, and you read about it like, oh, what the fuck does that mean? Like,
right.
You know,
gotta look up the dictionary. Like, yeah, what the no, fuck
and then
is
you
that?
Look at it, and then right under it, it has the fucking big amount of money. Oh shit. Hell yeah.
Let me take that. Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, at a young age, like they know how to mold you. They know how to do things to like pretty much don't say shit.
No, yeah. You well, know? The other thing too is like a lot of boxers come from humble beginnings. So yeah, to, you know, to someone like that, I mean, for me, like I would look at that number and be like, hell yeah. But just because it's a big number doesn't mean it's fair, because you're making them way more money.
Oh,
so
yeah,
you should have like, no matter what it is, for all the people that say you shouldn't be making this, you shouldn't be making that, if I'm generating this much money, I deserve my fair share of the money. I'm putting my body on the line at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's the way I've always felt. And I think that's why I clashed heads with a lot of like my ex, like promotion, my ex-managers. I clashed a lot of heads with them because I at one point I was like, bro, you guys can't keep punking me. I'm not that same young kid no more. I'm, you know, I got a family to feed. I got, you know, parents to look after. You know, I got shit to do still, and you guys want to double dip like off of me getting fucked up? Like, nah. Yeah,
fucked up.
So that's the knowledge I feed to the young generation, the generation that's coming up, you know, the generation that just turns pro. Like, always look at your contract and always have a second person go over it with you, because that's only going to save you at the end.
Right. So I feel like that's like a higher level like beginner, right? But let's say like we're going back to more of a fundamental like beginner, someone who's like just getting started. What would you recommend them? Like, what is like the path they should take to become a boxer?
Just to always stay dedicated to the sport. If this is something they want to do, you got to give your 100% in this game at all times. You can't let off. You can't let off the gas and be like, oh, I'll come back to boxing. Because once you give yourself that break, you got other fighters coming up that are going to take that spot, or they're going to pass you up. And by the time you play catch up, they're already on another level. So in this game, you really have to dedicate your life to it. I was just talking to, you know, one of the homies at the gym, and we were just having the same conversation. And I was telling him, I was like, man, like, people don't understand what you do until they do it. Until they put strap gloves on and in the gym day in and out, you won't know unless you do it. You know, boxing takes a lot from you. It also gives you a lot. But if you don't take care of yourself and you're not in the gym all the damn time, or not focused on the sport, like, it will pass you up. It'll pass you up quick. And there's been times, like, I've had, you know, girlfriends, that were like, oh, you only want to see me at night, or you only have, you know, time for me an hour or two. What were you doing the whole time? Why are you always at the gym? I'm focused on my career. I'm focused. You know, I have friends calling me, hey, Jesse, let's go. We got the club lined up. Like, come on. Nah, bro, I got to wake up tomorrow morning. I got to go put miles in. You know, and those are all like so many sacrifices, even being away from the family, being away from your girl, your kid. You know, I was away from my kid for, you know, his first year that he was born. That was the toughest thing for me because I literally saw my son being born. And then 2 days later, boom, on the road back to camp, you know, and it fucks with you. But as long as you stay in the game and you stay in the right mindset, you can make it. Mm-hmm. You can make it. And, you know, and without the distractions, there's a lot of distractions, especially when it comes to like women, friends, you know, the people that don't understand the game. You know, it's they want to take you out of that because they don't understand until they actually do it. You know, or they go to the gym and see what you do, and then it's like it gets for real.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your words, man, with our audience, and thanks for letting us be one of the first people that get to really break down your story, man. I feel like it's a very underrated story with a lot of good knowledge there for anyone. You don't have to be a boxer to take. A lot of lessons that you shared with us. So we appreciate that for real.
Yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. No, this is dope. And I'm, you know, happy for you guys. Proud of you guys. You guys are starting your thing. And you know, I wish you guys nothing but the best. And
appreciate it.
Let those followers rank up. So make sure you guys hit that follow button, man. Don't be fucking playing.
We got to have you back once you win that world title.
Yeah. Even after the next fight, you know, there's something to talk about.
For sure, definitely.
You know, the dude and... But yeah, you know, thank you for having me, man.
Hell yeah, bro.
Get you that torta.
Yeah, for sure.
Let people know where they can find you on social media.
On social media, you can find me at underscore J Magdaleno on all platforms, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Twitter, I don't have. Really don't. Not too much.
After the Nair fight, like, yeah, get it.
You be dancing on TikTok?
No, I don't. I got a couple of videos up on there. I really haven't, like, let anybody know that, like, I have TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly post, like, well, my last two have been, like, about my son and his baseball. My son, everybody was like, oh, is your son going to box? Your son going to fight? I don't want him to fight. Even though there's days he'll be like, Dad, take me to the boxing gym. All right, bro, let's go. You know, and I'll teach him. I'll teach him in the garage or when we're at home and stuff. But
that baseball money.
He's a killer at baseball, bro. That's something that really shocked me as you know, a dad and from my family. My family comes from, like, they're fighters. I got my nephews that they're boxing, you know? So I'm like, damn, should I push him towards boxing? Nah, because I already know and I already been through, you know, what I've been through. And I don't want my son to ever deal with, you know, the type of situations I've dealt with or have people hold those high expectations for him, you know, like Chavez did with his son.
Yeah.
Not saying Julio Cesar Chavez was a bad fighter. He was a badass fighter, but.
Yeah, to have that legacy to live up to is crazy pressure.
It's very difficult, you know, and you see a lot of fighters fold. You see a lot of kids fold from that type of stuff. And that's something I didn't want my son, you know, to deal with. I wanted him to find his own career, his own path, and let him run with it. And thankfully he did. And he loves baseball. He's a hitter, you know. He plays second base and shortstop. And watching him do that, you know, just makes me a proud dad. And I'm like, man, this is dope.
You got to hook us up with Dodgers tickets.
Yeah, the day he makes it. And that's his favorite team. Yeah. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, bro, to one day, hopefully, you know, hopefully God puts us in that position where he's able to make it to the big leagues like that.
Yeah,
man.
Hell yeah.
That,
World Series?
Most definitely.
That'd be crazy, man.
Oh, man.
That'd be insane, nuts. You know? And that's something that I think about. It's always behind, you know, in my head. It's like, man, I'm excited to see this kid, what he brings to the table.
Hell yeah.
Because I know with me and his mom, like, you know, we're strong parents. We're very, you know, dedicated parents. And we're always there for him. And that's something that I think makes a kid, you know? It makes a kid.
No, for sure.
Become something and they know they have, you know, a backbone to fall on. And that's what I see with my son. He rolls with life and he's always happy, always in a good mood, and he's always ready to go play and play baseball. So it makes it easy for me.
Beautiful to see. Beautiful to see. All right, guys, let them know they can follow y'all on social media.
Instagram, Ocho Benji.
Me, Fredo's Fix on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram.
Guys, go ahead and follow my personal page. It's going to be at AKBTG. Follow the podcast page. It's going to be ontherun.pod. Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, all that good stuff, man. Thank y'all so much for all the recent episodes. Make sure you like this and stay and up to
follow.
Yes, sir. Stay up to date, man. Catch fight on. Coming soon. We're going to be there, man. We're going to vlog it. We're going to be there for the victory.
You got to vlog that. We got to vlog that.
Let's go, man. Let's go.
Appreciate y'all, man. We'll see y'all next week for another episode. Peace.